Good afternoon. We do have a quorum. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee to order. I see that we have our unappointed official, Representative Johnson, here to do his duty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move that we approve the minutes from both January 18th and January 19th.
Nice work.
We're getting better. Thank you.
You are improving every time.
Thanks.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you for that. We have before us today the issue of the Minlar system, and I think we're going to dive right into it. So if the folks from Farming want to step forward, that would be great. Before you start your presentation, I have to share my own frustration, frankly. And I don't think I'm the first chair to be frustrated. We met week before last, talked to you folks about this system and where it's at and how it's going, and you assured me that things were going ahead kind of on schedule and as you had planned. And the next day, an email was sent to the deputy registrars telling them that you were canceling their training, very important training, for this new system because the system has significant problems. I don't think that happened overnight. I think you knew there were problems when you talked to me, and you didn't tell me about it. You know, we all work for the same boss, or bosses, and that's the people of Minnesota. It's our job to see that the people of Minnesota get the things they need, and they get them when they need them. And our people are going to need driver's licenses. And if we pass this real ID bill, they're going to need them in a timely fashion. I'm assuming that there's not going to be another extension. There may be, I don't know, but I think we all have to assume that there's not going to be another extension and that we need to get the system up and running and working in time to issue real ID in a timely fashion. I'm angry. We need to communicate effectively, and that means I as a chair need to know what's going on with you folks. And when you tell me one day that things are fine, and I find out the next day that things aren't fine, I'm frustrated, extremely frustrated. And I also know, after my conversation with Representative Hornstein over lunch today, I'm not the first person to feel this way. And you're not the first staff people to have been chastised by a chair. There's a history here. A fairly long history. Apparently, this started back in as early as, I thought it was 2008, but I found out from one of my colleagues here that it's as early as 2003 that we've been talking about Minlars and how important it is to get a system up and running that issues licenses and titles in a timely fashion. This is pretty sad and pretty frustrating. I want to move forward in a positive fashion. I want to get the system up and running in a timely fashion. And I want the people of Minnesota to get what they need on time and at a price they can afford. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. And we're not going to get it done unless we are forthright and open and communicate effectively. I'm going to ask you to go through your presentation as quickly as you can today, because we have a number of testifiers that I think have important messages for us, and I want to hear from them. So we're going to go through your presentation. We're going to hear from the testifiers, and we're going to call you back to the stand to answer questions from members. So members, I'm going to ask you to delay your questions so that we can get through this work in a timely fashion. Write your questions down, and we will have as much time as possible at the end of this hearing to take your questions and get them answered to the best of these folks' ability. So I apologize for being angry, but I can't help it. But I am willing to work with you, and I hope you're willing to work with me. Please introduce yourselves for the record and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Don Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services.
And for the record, I'm Paul Meekin. I'm the Chief Business Technology Officer, partnering with Public Safety.
Thank you for this opportunity to come and provide an update on the status of the MNLARS project. Let me begin by saying I share a lot of the same comments that the chairman made. We have the same goals and expectations in mind. I believe there's just some miscommunication that happened for no other reason than it was just a miscommunication. And so our goal here today is to provide you with the background on MNLARS, where we are today, what the status is of the project, and what we'll be doing next. And we'll stand ready to answer your questions or your feedback. Paul and I are going to take turns at making this presentation. Paul represents MNIT. I represent Department of Public Safety. So first, let me talk about the mission of MNLARS. Our mission is to build and deliver the best secure system, secure driver and vehicle information system that is within budget, easy to use and maintain, and that allows for future enhancements. So why do we need MNLARS? Here's some background on why we are here today. The mainframe is a 30-year-old system. That's our current system. It's well past its prime. In 2007, a system analysis was done and recommended that we replace the system and not invest any further dollars into upgrading or enhancing that system. Layering today's technology into an old system increases system vulnerability. Our current system is not able to handle the kind of demands that is placed on it for users, for security, for enhancements, and for changes. The limited ability to accommodate a change is not necessarily limited. Minor changes require major development effort, and changes to one function may unknowingly affect other functions. And I think that's conversations that we've had with committees in the past. When you've asked for changes to be made, the time it takes us on the mainframe system to make those changes is just unrealistic. So these are our project goals. These are the goals that we established back in 2008, and they don't change as of today. We want to ensure that the integrity of our data is pure and accurate and secure. We want to reduce reliance on redundant paperwork processing. When this in turn happens, it reduces our wait times, especially on our titles and special plates. We want to build a framework that accommodates changes. We want to create a governance platform that incorporates enhancement development in regularly scheduled development cycles. Once the MNLARS system is stood up, enhances will continue to roll out every 10 weeks. We'll constantly upgrade the system to provide new improvements and different ways of doing business. And we, too, want to make sure that we are meeting the needs of Minnesotans. As you know, the Department of Public Safety is responsible for the development and maintenance of the MNLARS system. When we took this project over in 2014, the department decided this was a project that we had to take on internally. We partnered with MNIT, and we asked them to be our partner and work with us in making sure that we could get this system built to meet today's demands, meet future demands, and do it in a way that is the most efficient and the most effective. So DVS was appointed the division as a contact for this process. We provide project leadership. We engage with key business partners in planning. And we have key staff that serve as subject matter experts. MNIT provides leadership as well. We are partners in the leadership of this project. They work with business subject matter experts, which would be our staff, deputy registrars, to get feedback on the requirements. They also have to continue to maintain the aging legacy system, which is a system that we are trying to shut down. And they are responsible for the ongoing maintenance of MNLARS. As each phase is implemented, as we stand it up, They're responsible for maintaining the system, making sure that it's working the way it needs to, and questions can get answered from users. So this is an example of where our budget stands today. In fiscal year 16, those are actual expenses that were spent or used to pay for the Menlars development system. We're in fiscal year 17 now. We're projecting $22 million with the final availability of funds to be used in fiscal year 18 of $26 million. Development funding, such as the technology surcharge, ended on June 30th of 2016. The maintenance costs that DVS and Minute have established will be for ongoing conversations and discussion within this session. So here's a timeline to give you some background and perspective on the project itself. In 2008, we came to this legislature requesting funding to be able to build this system. We knew the system was past its prime, it lost its viability, and we knew we needed to make changes. And the legislature provided us an opportunity for those changes by implementing a dollar technology fee on all vehicle, motor vehicle transactions, as well as driver's license transactions. In 2009 to 2010, we identified the requirements of what this would take for us to replace this system. It took a significant amount of planning and research and preparation to move forward. We had to hire an outside consultant to come in and understand the requirements of the system, what would be needed, and they wrote and helped us write the RFP that we put out for vendors to apply for. This process took several months, several meetings, and several discussion. On April 25th of 2012, we signed the contract with our vendor for the development of Menlars. As you know, our expectations for that vendor and the product that we were receiving did not live up to our expectations. So in July of 2014, we served that vendor with an order of termination, and we ended that agreement. Early in September of 2014, we rolled out the first phase of Menlars, which is the permit system, and that system still is viable today. We at that time started planning, how are we going to do this and what's the best approach? And that's when the decision was made that the department, along with our partners at Minute, would take on this project and build it ourselves. So where we stand today. Last year in 2015, we stood up our first scrum team in March. We started planning, and we knew we had statutory requirements to make that were written in statute that we knew were our top priority, and that was on the motor vehicle side of the functionality that had to do with wheelage tax. So we made some changes to our approach, which areas would we be focused on, and we started development with the motor vehicle section. We began our outreach with the deputy registrars in April of 2015. We had a meeting with them. We talked over ways that they could be involved. We offered them options, and we proceeded to go from that direction. We also provided our first demonstration of what the system would look like, and we continue to do that today. Every 2 weeks, we provide a glimpse as to what's new in the system, what can you do now, what changed from last time, and we invite stakeholders, external users to participate in those demonstrations. In 2016, we started working with directly with the deputy registrars. They provided us with an employee that served directly on the team to provide their input, which we found was tremendously valuable because it showed what life is like from their perspective. So we have a team member from a deputy registrar office that sits with our regular business staff and works directly on the Menlars project. We made some adjustments in our rollout plan. We added a practice and training phase, which is what we're coming up to right now. We knew it would be important for the deputy staff to play in the system, to try to understand how this would work in their office, because while their business objectives hadn't changed, the way they would do business is going to be different. We provided a live demonstration at the MDRA annual meeting this past September. We went step through step of all the transactions, what it would look like, how this would work in Menlars. And then in October, we stood up what we call the read-only phase of Menlars, which was basically our core foundation of the entire motor vehicle system. This was the work that we had been working on for more than a year. This is the foundational structure of the entire MNLAR system, and we stood that up successfully. We also started in November, I believe, started transitioning deputy registrars to get registered into the system. We asked for updated user agreements because of the change with the system, and we also asked them to start registering into the MNLAR system. Start to get your username, your password set up so you're ready when the system is ready to go. So now we're at 2017. Right now we're getting ready to start dealer transitioning, getting the dealers stood up so they're ready for MNLARs when it stands up for all users to start working in. We have training for deputy registrars and DVS staff registration. We've asked them to sign up and dedicate a time. We realize with this delay that adjusted the time frame, but that still continues today. The training and practice phase, as I mentioned earlier, is their chance to go in and replicate the kind of work that they're doing during the day to see how it works in MNLARs. It's an adoption phase, we call it. It's simply for them to try it out. There's nothing that would happen to the system. There's no concern about the data, but it's a trial run to see how this process works in their office. We want them to send that work to us so we can test it out on our end to see how are we going to handle this work when it comes into us. Added to all of this, we also have a mainframe system that we have to be closing down. And I'll let Paul speak more to what that looks like. We refer to that as decommissioning. Our mainframe system currently holds both the motor vehicle and driver's license information. And so at this point, we're only able to take down the motor vehicle portion of it because the driver's license system has to stay viable until we've built MNLARs for driver services. That development phase for driver services started the end of December. It started at that time because we knew there was potential for Real ID implementation coming up in 18, and we needed to get ahead of what the potential might be. So the development is going on right now for driver services, and more development will continue to go as we move forward. In 2018, we expect to finish driver's license implementation, and we expect that we will retire the legacy system. And I just want to reinforce for your information that when we took over this project in 2014, we certainly understood the controversy that would be surrounding that. We understood the concern not only from our stakeholders but from legislators as well. So we put together a plan in 2014 that we can say today emphatically we are on target with that same plan. We are at where we said we were going to be by this time, and we're moving forward into that next phase. We continue to get better and better as we continue to grow and understand and learn more as we go forward. And at the closing of this document, I'll show you the recent audit report that we had from an external auditor that we've hired specifically to come in and do an audit assessment of how the project is looking today, the health of the MNLARs project. It is an independent. It's not somebody even within the state of Minnesota that provides this report to us. So to give you some understanding of our stakeholder outreach, this is a list of things that we have done to engage the deputy registrars and dealer association members. We have bi-monthly strategy meetings with a select group of deputy registrar members. We have monthly stakeholder committee meetings, which provides them with a chance to see MNLARs, provide some feedback, and ask questions. We also have a joint group of DVS and MDRA monthly communication team meetings where we talk jointly about what is the best way to communicate with their audience, what message should be delivered, getting their feedback as to what will work for deputy registrar offices. We continue to have monthly system demonstrations. We open the system up. We demonstrate how this system will work. As I said before, we have an MDRA representative that is embedded right with the MNLARs teams and works directly with the business and the technical teams. I also mentioned we've done a presentation at the MDRA annual membership meeting. We have target communication, specific communication that goes out directly to deputy registrar offices, managers, and what we like to call super users. We ask the deputies to identify somebody in their office that could be a point of contact, that probably is a little more comfortable in working with technology, that can be your go-to person, can be your support person. There is no way possible that we can interact with all members, so if each office will designate a member, we'll work directly with them on the training and information, and they are a source of communication for us as well. We've offered try-it sessions. We brought deputy registrar staff and DVS staff in for an opportunity to test the system out, to try it and see how it works. We also have bi-monthly meetings with the Dealers Association to keep them apprised of our progress, what our expectations are, what we need to do, and have that open door of communication. Most importantly, we have data access training for the what we call our data use representatives. This is a person that lives inside a deputy registrar office or is assigned to that office that makes decisions over who's going to get access to data and what data they're going to have access to. We felt that that discretion at a local level was much more productive and more efficient than it would be for us to have to do that on our level. So data use representatives have a little bit more flexibility and access that they can generate. They can take access away. They can assign access. It gives a little bit more local control to who's doing what in the system. We provided each office with a new barcode reader, which is intended to help and move along the data inputting process, which is going to be new for the deputies. And we also gathered IT contact information. We wanted to know who their technical support would be. So if we had issues with systems or whatever else, we could speak clearly to somebody that understood more from a technical perspective the needs or what the situations are. So I wanted to give you an example of this is what our current system looks like today. This is what staff have to work with. As you can tell from this screen, there's no room for screens to accommodate any extra information that we'd like to collect. There's literally no more space on this real estate. We have limited character spacing for names and addresses. We can only go up to 24 carats, so many times we have to truncate and minimize the number of characters that we're putting in the field.
Director Olson, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we don't need to spend a lot of time examining the old system. I think we know that it needs to be replaced,
okay.
And I'd like to get through this presentation as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So if you could just kind of give us a brief overview of these screens and move along, I think that'd be very helpful.
Okay. So we wanted to show you, this is what MnLARS looks like today. It's able to capture much more information. We can capture things that we currently don't capture, such as purchase price, trade-in value, a plate of a trade-in vehicle, and it keeps a running total. You'll see up in the right-hand column. It calculates the fees as the deputy is going through the transaction, which is something that wasn't available before. So it improves efficiency and accuracy. We also have more flexibility in how we allow special plates to be ordered. Deputies can do that right from their office now instead of having to send paperwork into us. They can order directly from MnCorp, and this will get the plates out to the customer much more faster than the past process of sending that into us. We also have the flexibility around the wheelage tax that we can change the rates for wheelage tax, which is exactly what the statutory language asked us to do. And lastly, we can add a section here for mailing transactions. If a customer comes in, needs to get a copy of their title, and they're not going to be at that address, they're going to be out of state, we have the capability of applying an alternative address. We can also add up to 12 lien holders if that is the request. The deputies can also use this form. Instead of they currently have to hand fill out a form when a customer comes in, we call it our PS2000. They have to fill it out, have the customer sign it. MnLARS will print this form out and has a space for customers to sign it at the bottom. So like we've said, to recap, MnLARS will calculate all fees. MNLARS will eliminate the need for a deputy register to prepare a daily financial report. MNLARS updates records in real time. MNLARS will improve data accuracy with a user interface that employs system edits, drop-down menus, and autofill fields. MNLARS will reduce the letters to customers with required fields such as insurance information, motorcycle engine number, and odometer readings. MNLARS improves user access security and data access auditing. And MNLARS increases our system stability. This is a highlight of what we did in 2016 when I said we stood up the read-only portion of MNLARS, the foundation of our MNLARS system. Our next phase is to move into the adoption phase, which I explained earlier was the training and practicing phase for the deputies, and then move into our full implementation of the production, which is standing up the system that will actually have live data with live updates in it. That will happen in the spring of 2017. And as I said earlier, the health of our project is evaluated every quarter. This is our most recent quarterly report from our auditor. And they say the health of the project is good. So that concludes my presentation, if you have any questions for me at this point.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your presentation. And we're going to go ahead to testifiers, then we'll bring you back up after the testifiers have made their presentations. I have a number of folks on the list, and I'm just going to go down the list as I have it. First is Amanda Coppin, Deputy Registrar from South St. Paul, followed by Susan Jensen. Thank you for joining us today. If you'd please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, I'm not Amanda Coppin. Unfortunately, she just stepped out. She'll be back briefly. But again, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here on behalf of the Deputy Registrars Association. I'm joined by the Association President, Suzanne Jensen. I'd like to make just a few opening remarks and then turn it over to the Deputy Registrars, who are more well-versed in the issues before us today in this committee. Committee members, the Deputy Registrars Association is comprised of 174 offices across the state. These offices, are appointed. The individual deputies are appointed by the Commissioner of Public Safety, and we are regulated by Driver and Vehicle Services. All of these offices are set up to be self-sufficient. They do not receive one dime of assistance from the state. Rather, they survive on the filing fees that are connected to the transactions with the customers that come in and seek our services. The deputy registrars across the state are very proud of what they do. They work very hard to assist the customer in all of their transactions with the state mandated taxes and registration fees. And certainly, I would like to just point out that there are a number of deputies here in the audience today, and certainly all 174 offices would certainly love to be here today, but because of their duties, they simply cannot do that. Suffice it to say, I think in general, the deputy registrars do have some concerns about MNLARS. They are not seeking to sabotage the momentum of it, and certainly they do recognize that it is a needed system to put into place. However, we fear that there are some shortcomings with the system, and we fear that in the anticipated launch and implementation of the system in perhaps only a few weeks away, that we must speak out and bring to your attention these matters. And so without any further ado, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'd like to first turn over to the Association President, Sue Jensen.
Welcome to committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Suzanne Jensen, and I am the president of the Minnesota Deputy Registrar Association. And the reason we're here today is so that you are aware of how we feel about the new system. We are excited about the new system. We want the best product out there for our citizens, so when they come into all of our offices throughout the state, that they receive the services that they are accustomed to. And as we outlined in our letter to you and to the commissioner, there are areas of concern, and those areas have been brought up through our deputy that is on the committee, and also through many of our meetings. And so we feel these need to be addressed before it's rolled out and some services are not going to be there for our citizens.
Would you like to go ahead and go into some of those details, please?
Yes, I will. As I noted in the letter, we have the input errors, which is a transaction that may need to be corrected, reversed, and at present we are able to contact St. Paul. They can help us correct it. The customer is not affected by this input error, and right now there is nothing like that in the Minlar system. And if you would like examples of where that possibly could occur, I could help you out there and give you an example.
We do have, you know, a sort of limited amount of time.
Yep,
and,
that's okay.
And you're not going to train us to be deputy registrars.
Okay.
I, for one, am not capable. So we're really here on a mission of discovery. And
okay.
If you can point out some of what you feel are critical issues with the system, that's mm-hmm. What we really need.
So our second issue was the prorate. We found out last week that the offices that normally all offices throughout the state can handle some prorate transactions. And those are done by trucking companies, private owners that have semis and so on. And we found out that the regular registrars who are not prorate deputies will not be able to handle those transactions. We do have concerns about inventory tracking and what our inventory systems will look like and how we will account for the stickers and plates that we have in our offices. Some services will be eliminated, some title services. One is the fast track, where a customer can get a title in about a week. And this is important to some dealers and lenders, because they need to know that lien holder is put onto their title. There's also a computerized registration vehicle system that the dealers use, and that is being stopped at some offices already. And, of course, the training was supposed to begin in January, and that was indicated to us back in September, but that has been since canceled or delayed, and we don't have a date yet as to when training will begin. But the adoption phase is supposed to be currently ongoing now through March. So those are our concerns. If Amanda at all would like to touch on any that I've missed, she's welcome to, or if you have a question for us.
Welcome to the committee. If you have something to add, please feel free to do so.
Well, just for the record, my name is Amanda Coppin, and I am the legislative chair for the MDRA this year. My office is from South St. Paul, Deputy 35. So basically, I'm kind of just going to reiterate what Sue said a little bit. We really are excited for a new system, and that's not what we really want to state here today. We know that we need a new system, and we're excited for the new system. There's lots of capabilities in that system that we are very excited about. The problem is that there are major deficiencies in the system that I think are going to majorly affect the citizens and the public when they're coming into our office. It's going to cause longer lines. We are going to be able to have probably more staff at our locations, just because we're doing more of the upfront work, which is going to be better for the citizens in the long run. But like Dawn had stated before, it's a change in our business practice. And that's why this training or adoption phase is so important. And it keeps getting, well, it's getting shorter and shorter, and deployment is getting closer and closer. And that is kind of a little, it makes all of us a little uneasy, because it is so new and it is a big change for us. The one big thing besides the training that I kind of wanted to, you know, reiterate was the title service options that we are not going to be able to use once the system is live. In my opinion, we currently have a system that, yes, needs to be replaced, but we do have everything in that system to do our jobs. Right now, as it sits, there are certain deficiencies in the MNLARS program that are taking title service options away from us. They're taking title transactions away from us, and they're sending them to, you know, in my opinion, it's not in the benefit of a citizen to tell somebody, a trucker, okay, you have one office that you can do your semi-trailer transaction at, and that's the ProRate office in downtown DVS. Can't park a truck there, got to pay for parking. I mean, it's quite an inconvenience, and in my opinion, to take thousands of transactions away from a deputy office on a rollout and then tell me that, yes, but that'll be an enhancement to the system, and unfortunately, yes, I don't like that answer, and I don't think the citizens are going to like that answer either. There's more things that we could go into, but to keep time short, those are my major issues right now.
We're going to go to a few member questions. Members, I know you know that we're on a fairly tight timeline, but as long as we have these folks up here, questions directly related to them are appropriate at this time. We'll start out with Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I also appreciated your comments at the beginning of the hearing. We do share a common concern over many years bipartisanly about this issue. So I guess my question, maybe it's for DPS. I know that we have your letter before us. We have a similar letter from the Automobile Dealers Association, and I guess I'd be interested to know the response from DPS to these letters. Maybe we could do that later.
I think we'll do that later, okay. Representative Hornstein. If you have questions directed
okay.
to these testifiers,
well, let's hold that one, and then, Mr. Chairman, we can get to that. I imagine others in the committee were interested in the response.
Sure. Representative Hall.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, when was it planned for you to start training, and when is the training now supposed to become for the implementation of this? And how much of that training now can be done? I mean, is it just getting shifted closer to, or is it getting condensed?
Ms. Coppin.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and committee members, the training was set for January. That's what we were told in September. But as you indicated in your opening statements, on January 13th is when we were told there would not be training in January. And at this point, we do not have a date for training.
A follow-up, Representative Howe. Next, I have Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just trying to get an idea of the services at the MDRA. Do I understand, do you do driver's license issuance for trucks and cars? Is that something you do?
Ms. Cobb.
I'm not certain.
Mr. Chair, there are offices that offer different services. Many offices do motor vehicle, which is your titles, plates, tabs, and driver's licenses. So, yes, we offer both. Most of them do.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, then, is that for cars, trucks, commercial, boats, everything that gets a license can come out of your office?
Ms. Cobb.
Most offices most. Do, yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if that's part of the problem, that some of the offices do all of it and some do a portion of it. Maybe that's an issue that I'd be interested to know more about.
Comment, Representative. Next, I have Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question was along the same lines of Representative Brumbeck, in that it's concerning to me when I'm hearing that there are services that are currently being offered to citizens, and if I'm understanding correctly, are going to be taken away from you, certain services, and centralized to a few locations throughout Minnesota. That's definitely going to create an inconvenience to many Minnesotans. But then for purposes of clarity, is it the understanding that those services will come back at some point when MNLARS is further rolled out, or is this a permanent centralizing of those services?
Ms. Coppin.
Do you want to answer that?
Ms. Johnson.
Yes. What we have been told is that CVR, which is the Computerized Vehicle Registration System, would be put on what we were told, or what I've heard, is a 10-week standstill while they develop the interface for it. Now, Fast Track, I have been told, will be permanently disabled, unless I am mistaken.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Lucero.
And then with those services, and I do most of my business with the deputy registrars, and so it's excellent service. I'm proud to be a frequent customer. My understanding, then, as you've explained here as well, that you make your money off of the certain fees that are attached to each type of transaction. So the thought going through my mind, then, is that if certain transactions are going to be pulled away from you, and then I also heard you say in your remarks that in order, because of the reduced time for training, you're going to have to ramp up the number of employees that you're going to have in order to maintain a certain level of high-quality service that Minnesotans expect. So you're going to bring in less revenue, you're going to have more expenses. That seems like it's going to create some pressure on your ability to survive.
Ms. Coppin.
Ms. Jensen.
I'm sorry. Well, either one. I'm just, it's a little hard for me to read your body language. So.
That is true, Mr. Chair, that is definitely a concern that revenue will be lost. And especially when we found out about the prorate services that we wouldn't be able to handle anymore after
Thank
this.
Thank you. Next, I have Representative Beskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank Ms. Coppin and Ms. Jensen. So I thought I heard that actually the customer experience is going to take longer. Can you explain that again? And the follow-up and related question would be, isn't part of the premise of the development of the program to begin with to be more customer-friendly and take less time instead of more? Those are two questions.
Ms. Jensen.
So, yes, it's my understanding at the very beginning of this rollout, with the condensed environment that we have not had to even go into the system to try different transactions, it's going to take us longer at the counter to process those. Now, what that means is that on top of it, not only are we having to train our staff in a new system, but it's one thing to train a staff person. It's another thing to train them in a whole new system of how to operate the whole transaction in general. So at first, we're going to be slower. Now, does that mean that we're going to get faster at it? Of course, we will once we get used to the system. The overall experience from a point like where the customer comes in to when they get their title, Menlars is supposed to shrink that immensely because we're grabbing more of that information up front from the customer rather than necessarily it's going to be a live entry type deal. So you're going to come in, we're going to ask you, okay, all the information, we're going to type it into the system, it'll generate the PS2000 like document that they're talking about, and we'll have the customer sign. You know, we'll have to look over it and sign. That's why I'm saying it's going to be a little bit more time consuming, because right now we can give the customer a form, have them fill it out, come back up. Then we can get the rest of the transaction done while we're still doing work. You know, we might then at that point in time be doing somebody's driver's license or doing somebody else's tabs. It's not like we're going to be able to walk away from that customer and multitask as much anymore. We're going to have to sit with that customer, go through that transaction. So, yeah, the upfront experience with the deputy with the transaction like that is going to be a few minutes longer. Which does bring me to another thing that is kind of a big deal for larger offices, like Anoka County, Hennepin County. Right now they have multiple locations, and they have staff members that can work, you know, in those multiple locations, so they can float from, you know, Blaine to Ramsey to, you know, wherever they need to go. In what I'll call the old Menlars system, which is Menlars HP, the one that was developed by Menlars, we had those offices could have one username and login, and then they would just choose the office. So they, no matter what office they went to, they had the same username and login to get into the system. With the new Menlars Minute, that's not the case. They're going to have separate usernames and logins for each office. So in our opinion, we already feel like that portion of the system is going backwards from what had already been developed. Because with our permits, they have one username and login that they can use, but now with this new system, they're going to, if they go to Blaine, they're going to have one username. If they go to Ramsey, they're going to have another username. So it's just more inundated information on top of what they're already having to learn. And it's not like we really don't want to, you know, it's not that the system and the concept of the system isn't good. We just feel like there's a lot of concern, you know, in the deputy network that the system is not going to be as functional and viable and as customer citizen friendly as it should be if we roll it out right away.
Follow-up, or Sam Joskowski.
No, that's good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. By the way, I've requested a new computer system that has your names displayed on the table, but it's been delayed, so you're going to have to suffer with my inadequacy. Sorry about that. Next, I have Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The illustration that you used regarding the truckers, can you give me some idea of maybe how many that would be at each office and how much money that means?
Mr. Hurst.
Well, since I've been put on the spot, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mason, these types of transactions occur, these are limited to, say, a title transfer of a truck or a semi-truck. Unfortunately, I don't have that information at my hand right now, but quite honestly, what the proposed Minlar system would do is, instead of allowing 174 offices to do this, it would be limited to, I believe, 9 offices that do full prorate services. And those are the more complicated transactions for your IFTA decals, your gas tax, international fuel tax agreement things, and your quarterly payments. But certainly to require the entire trucking industry to only use 9 or 10 offices statewide doesn't seem like very user-friendly, specific to that industry. I will say this, that because this... that particular issue is one that just recently came up, and the department is aware of it. So I have full faith that they will do the right thing to make the necessary corrections on that. But that's one example of a correction that we are advocating to be done to the system prior to its full rollout and implementation, as well as a few other ones that we feel are critical, because otherwise... we fear that once it goes live, if they stay on the schedule that they are planning for this spring as early as March, there are going to be some problems with it. And then you combine that with the fact that there hasn't been enough training for 174 offices and their staff across the entire state.
A follow-up, Representative Mason?
Thank you. No, I just was trying to see how it would impact each individual office. Thank you.
All right. Next, I have Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question stems to when were you involved in the input into the design of this system? Or when did you get involved in it, and how much input have you had into the development in the process of Minlar's?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Howe, according to my notes, and I believe the DVS made mention to the fact that they brought in a representative to be embedded with Minlar's. That occurred, I believe, in December of 2015, and then our actual the bi-monthly meetings, I believe, only started in August of last year.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how far along was the Minlar system at that point, and how much change could you impact?
Mr. or one of the ladies.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Howe, Ms. Coppin, just informing you, some, I think I'm going to turn it to her as far as the specific time frame on that. Thank you.
So we were involved in the Minlar's HP permit development also. They did have stakeholders that they would bring in for those meetings. Then the contract, like she had said, was terminated. Then at that point, Minute started developing. Like he said, we really didn't start getting much involvement until about when our representative went to go sit with them downtown, which was probably December.
Well, thank you, Ms. Coppin. Next, I have Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be kind of a question for Director Olson as well, but if some of the testifiers here from the Deputy Registrar's Office were talking about the training to get up to date with the new MNLAR system, previous sessions and testimonies from the department had asked, we tried to save some money by combining training with for Real ID along with it, if I remember correctly from last year, I think it was. So to the Deputy Registrar's, how confident are you feeling that you'll not only be able to get trained on MNLARs, but then also get up to speed to do what we need to do to issue real IDs if in fact, we do pass a bill?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kosnick, a good question. I guess we have to take it one step at a time. We can't really get trained on real ID until the system is set up on the driver's license side for real ID. Hopefully, hopefully that will come about, but right now we've got a very tight time frame to do training just on the motor vehicle side. So hopefully it won't be as difficult or time consuming on driver's license, but who knows? I know with Real ID there's going to be requirements for us to be able to identify documents, make sure they're legitimate and such. So I don't know, but I guess one step at a time, and we got to get through this first phase first.
Thank you. Any final comments from any of the three of you at this time?
I would have some final comments.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, we ask that you have the department address our concerns, because in the end, we just want our citizens to receive the same services that they are accustomed to seeing.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. With that, we're going to switch out to the Auto Dealers Association. Are you flying solo this afternoon?
I am flying solo, Mr. Chair and members.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Certainly. My name is Amber Backus. I'm the Director of Government Affairs of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association, and here on behalf of its 365 franchised new and car truck dealers located across the state of Minnesota. And our members have a long and multifaceted relationship with the agency. They're regulated by DVS, who grants them licenses needed to operate as motor vehicle dealers. They are customers of DVS who utilize the vehicle registration services provided to manage their own fleet, and they are partners of DVS who assist in processing titles and registrations on behalf of consumers who purchase new and used vehicles. In consideration of the many interactions our member dealerships have with DVS and the importance of the relationship, we do not relish the role we find ourselves in today, but we are compelled to come forward to request a delay in the March 2017 implementation of MNLARs until all current functionality offered through the legacy mainframe system is offered. The system's been adequately tested, and disruptions in service will be at a minimum. If the system goes live in March of this year, as DVS is intending, we don't believe that any of these conditions will be met, and the vehicle registration system will fail Minnesotans. As you heard in testimony from the agency last week, there is currently a delay in title processing of 50 days, and this fall, delays were anywhere from 3 to 4 months long. Consumers and impacted parties, like banks who have lien interest in the vehicles, have been frustrated by their inability to get a title in a timely fashion and often mistakenly believe it's the dealer who is responsible for the delays. In a meeting with DVS in 2016, staff told us that when MNLARs goes live, title processing could be further delayed, further aggravating consumers. And currently, as you heard from the deputy registrars, the state offers two workarounds to counter the backlog through the issuance of fast-track titles and by allowing dealers to participate in an electronic titling system. When MNLARs goes live, neither of these functions will be available. The agency has decided to discontinue fast-track titles in the new MNLAR system, and they have not built the capacity to do electronic titling in the initial release of MNLARs. Without electronic titling, around 6,800 title transactions per month, or 82,000 per year, will have to be processed by dealers and deputy registrars the old-fashioned way, using a paper process that takes longer, requires entries to be made multiple times, and increases the chance for error, especially when it comes to calculating the fees owed by a customer. Is this what we want the public to get from a project that is already 5 years overdue and $40 million over budget? Unfortunately, we did not learn that electronic titling would not be part of the first release and unavailable to our member dealers until May 25th of 2016, 8 years into the MNLARS project, and after numerous assurances from the agency that the new system would, at a minimum, offer all the current functionality before additional features were added. While the agency did promise development of electronic titling would be a top priority and could be designed into the next 10-week program increment after MNLARS goes live, the vendor will need time to rewrite a program to interface with the MNLARS system, which could take at least another year based on their estimates, leaving Minnesota dealers and their customers without an efficient vehicle titling option and the prospect of continued unacceptable delays. If the project had been on schedule, the current electronic titling vendor would have been tapped to develop the interface with MNLARS as part of their existing contract, and they could have been a resource to the agency. However, the launch of MNLARS now coincides with the end of their contract, so DVS and the Department of Administration will be launching an RFP process that could further disrupt access to electronic titling services. You've heard from the agency in their presentation that the goals of MNLARS are to reduce transaction processing times and improve access and accuracy and consistency and standardized processes and reduce paperwork and paper flow. But without the current electronic titling system that's in place, we think we're going to go backwards. They've also said that customer assistance and communication would be improved, and I'm a little frustrated to learn today that the agency has been telling deputy registrars not to offer the computerized vehicle titling process. That's the first time I've heard that, despite having bi-monthly stakeholder meetings with the agency. So again, we don't think going live in March will take us forward. It will take us backwards, and we ask the agency and you as policymakers to postpone the release of MNLARS until at a minimum it's able to provide all capabilities and services currently available to Minnesotans so that we can continue to deliver essential vehicle titling and registration functions in a timely manner. And with that, I'd be available for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have a number of questions for you, Ms. Backus. We'll start with Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Backus, can you give us some understanding of why the agency does not want to do electronic titling for you? I mean, it seems where you want to go with a brand new, you know, computerized system is more efficiency, not less.
Ms. Backus.
Correct. Mr. Chair and members, I don't think it's that they don't want to. My understanding is they don't have the capacity under this system to have it designed when it goes live. They have committed that would be a top priority, but again, we've seen delays after delays, and other priorities have obviously come about with some of the issues the deputy registrars have pointed out. So I just don't have confidence that it'll necessarily happen anytime soon, especially when now you have to engage a new vendor to help develop it.
I mean, it's really kind of shocking.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Backus, I need to be clear on this. Is Fast Track, so Fast Track is a third-party vendor? Is that why there's typically a fee associated with that?
I'm sorry, no. Fast Track is an availability to pay an extra $20 to get your title turned around. I think it's in 3 days or so. And that's something that's offered through the deputy registrars currently. The electronic vehicle entitling system does use an outside vendor to help facilitate that program, and that gets the dealer management systems with all the consumer information to talk directly with the driver or vehicle services, and so it eliminates having to enter work because you're pulling that information over.
Thank you. Representative Miller, in my opinion, it's a system designed to make you pay an extra fee to get the service you deserve to get in the first place. Representative Miller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's. I don't want to dig too deep because I think I'm going to go into those weeds because I've never understood how it's a certain system, and then if you pay a little bit more, it goes quicker. But then even more tragic is if this is within the department, unless I'm, and we don't have to go too far down this road because maybe I don't understand it, but if this is all internal, then why is it not going to be continued on? I mean, at this point, it sounds like I'd probably be willing to pay $25 to get it quicker at this point. So, can you briefly enlighten me on that without going too deep into this, why this is a service that can't be continued even though it's within the department?
I am not your source of light on this.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Backus, did you have any further comments on that particular issue?
No.
Then we'll move on to Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Backus, this is MNSURE-esque. So can you tell us, in your contemporary organizations throughout the rest of the country, they've had rollouts of these types of improvements over the years. Do they have this much problem, or is it only here in Minnesota?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, after talking to our vendor, they've pretty much seen it all around the country, but they said typically rewrite programs could go anywhere from 3 to 9 years, so we're obviously on the long end here, being at 9 years here in Minnesota. The costs vary very much around the country as well. They think they gave us estimates of around maybe $17 million to $80 million, but again, we've exceeded that here, so we would be on the high end, at least my understanding from the data they provided.
Representative Drazkowski, follow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Backus, thank you. That's very helpful. But in addition to that, when the product does finally roll out in the other states, does it work?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I'm not in a position to answer that question. I think some states have had greater success than others. I know a couple states did rewrites and are doing a second rewrite.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, I have Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up to Representative Drazkowski. Do you feel, I'm assuming you must do comparisons with people in other states, is the information or the products that we're trying to achieve that different than what is taking place in other states?
Ms. Backus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I don't know that I'm in a position to answer that, but it doesn't appear that way. I think a lot of states are trying to get into a 21st century technology and take advantage of the Internet and an easier interface than having a coded program.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have a question, Representative Hausman? Okay. I believe I have exhausted the question list. Do you have any final comments to make?
Mr. Chair and members, we just considerate your taking the time to listen to this issue, and we hope we can find a resolution that's going to work best for all Minnesotans, because we do want to have a new system that's more user-friendly, but we want it to succeed when it's launched.
Thank you. With that, do we have anyone else who would like to testify before we bring the committee back to the department back to the table? I do not see anyone. Thank you. Let's have our department folks return. Welcome back to the table. I'm glad to have you with us today. I really am. This is hard stuff. It's hard work, but let's buckle down and get it done. Representative Hornstein, you had a question earlier that you wanted to direct to the department. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your efforts. I guess I'd be interested in your response to what you just heard from the auto dealers and the deputy registrars. I saw you were taking notes, and so... maybe share with us the variety of concerns. I don't have anything in particular that just pops out, Mr. Chairman, but, what would your response be in general to what you heard?
Thank you. And I just wanted to add, we do have quite a bit of time here, so let's do this well and thoroughly. We've got about 45 minutes before committee ends, and so take your time and answer the questions as thoroughly as you can. Ms. Olson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I received the letter yesterday, a copy of that letter, and we had received the Dealer Association letter about a week ago. I would have to probably say I wasn't necessarily surprised at the concerns that had been brought up because they have been discussed. I think the challenge when we have stakeholder groups that we're working with and we're trying to set up a system like we are, the magnitude of this system that we're trying to set up, and meet the expectations that you've all shared and your concerns about not getting Minlars viable and not making it viable is certainly our top priority. And so we had to make decisions along the way about what is the most important thing that we can put out there that we can start using the system. And we decided that we need to put out enough functionality that about 90% of the work could be done in the Minlar system. And so that is what we're intending to stand up. The type of transactions that we've talked about today are not transactions that are going to go away. There's just going to be a delay. The reality behind those two type of transactions, the expedited service and CVR, is simply because of the nature of our current title background process. We have been up to 90 days, as was stated earlier. We're now at 48 days and turning around titles. That's not acceptable. And this has been a long-term problem in the state of Minnesota, that we've just had delays in title turnaround. So this legislative authority implemented expedited services to allow us the latitude for people that needed a title in critical situations, because by and large, most people don't need a title right away. They purchased a vehicle, they plan to retain that vehicle. But there are certainly circumstances where people do need a title, and they want it expeditiously. So the legislature gave us the authority to stand up this service. There's a fee that can be charged to the customer for expediting a service, and it is our obligation to turn it around in 3 days. Deputy offices had a choice on whether they wanted to participate in expedited services. Not all offices are participating. Our reasoning behind not eliminating expedited services, because we know that's probably not a reality, but our job is try to neutralize so we make the same service available for everybody. It's the same consideration around a CVR, our computerized vehicle transaction. It's intended for the customer to walk out the door with their plates and their tabs and with the expectation that they will get their title sooner. A question was asked if Minnesota was unique or are we similar. Minnesota is very much unique in how we handle the CVR process in the state, because not only do we charge a fee to the customer for a CVR transaction, which was stated at about $24, but an additional filing fee from the deputy registrars is also charged. So the deputies get a share of that transaction, as well as the customer has to pay additional amount of money. So we felt that it was important that we stood up what would be the most effective for all citizens across the state, realizing that it's not going to work in every situation, realizing we're going to have some mechanism to be able to continue to expedite titles for a period of time. And that is our expectation. We are going to work with deputy offices when people come in and say, we have a critical situation, how should we handle this? We're working on the steps to be able to mitigate that. It's just not going to be something that is going to be readily available in Menlars, but we want to work with deputies to be able to answer customer questions around that. As far as the CVR transactions, they stated that there's 82,000 transactions that they do. We have told the Dealers Association we're going to need some time. We have to build this functionality to be able to put it in Menlars. We have to get a new vendor in place, and then we'll be able to go forward. The comments about how long it's taking to get this system set up is based on how it was under the mainframe, which was about 8, 10 years ago. It's a different system. It's a new time. There's no expectation that it's going to take this long. So our true goal here is to make sure that we can meet the demands for service by the public, which is everybody should get the same service within the same time without having to pay extra fees for it. However, we know that service is going to have to exist. We're just not going to do it this spring. We may do it, we'll prioritize it. We've told the Dealers Association their computerized vehicle registration, that's the vendor, it's technically called EVTR, electronic vehicle title registration, will be stood up. It's the next priority. It's already on the docket to be worked. There's going to be a delay, but we have a workaround for citizens. They can get a 21-day permit. They can put that on their vehicle. The paper will continue to go to a deputy office. Plates will be mailed to the customer, or the customer can simply come in and have the plates put on their vehicle. There's limited impact on the availability and the service that will happen for customers. If I might, Mr. Chair.
I'd just like to interrupt you for just a moment, Ms. Olson. And I'd like to hear from, we've got this fine gentleman here for a minute who's been patiently waiting, I'm sure, to tell us some great information. And in relation to this question about functionality and the timing of when certain sectors of this become functional, can you just, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but could you tell us a little bit about just what you're up against at the minute?
Absolutely.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Paul Meekin, Chief Business Technology Officer. I'm a part of Minute. I support public safety. And You know, I think it's, if I could just take a minute to just kind of build a little context for it, Mr. Chair, what we were going down the road with in our first life on this, where we ended up with HP, was very much what's often called a waterfall methodology, where you decide everything up front that you're going to build, you go build it, and then you come back and show what you built. And that was not working. Industry has shown that does not work. That did not work for us. So what we have moved to since then is this Agile methodology. And the idea of Agile is really about partnership and transparency. And so the process by which we use for Agile, and I think that Director Olson was going to offer this later, but anyone who would want to come see how this works, because we have a floor, a development floor, with more than 80 people who work in close corridor, in a room not much bigger than this here, who work together with business people, with that deputy registrar member, with all the IT staff, who work together. And the idea of the transparency and the incremental process of this is that we take high-level business areas, we'll take like motor vehicle, and then break it down to four or five areas and keep breaking that down to different business processes. And then working with the business, they prioritize which ones we're going to build. And all of this is listed, prioritized, developed together. And the development happens all in real time in front of the business and in front of all the stakeholders who come see it. And we do these showcases that we talked about. And I'm going into great detail here because there's never a surprise with respect to this development process and how it works together. And that is a very big difference from how we were doing it before with HP. Now, the amount of work that's in the system, the number of business processes is absolutely immense. And the process by which the business says, these are the ones that we're going to do, and they really are doing business process reengineering, which is a mandate for the system and is a very big deal. You've heard the deputy registrars talk about how it's moving the entry, the keying of the information up to the front of it. That is a big change. That is a good change as far as data quality and as far as, in the end, the customer experience, them knowing exactly where they stand at the moment of that transaction. But those types of things are happening all the time, all day long. And so to be able to work through this immense amount, DVS has very large business processes, like I said, and decisions are made, hundreds of decisions are made every day as far as what we're going to work on. And so when Don is talking about decisions had to be made, it is a matter of drawing the line and then saying, what can we build and have it have good quality? And I do want to comment on one thing about the letter that went out that said that we're delaying the training. And the dread administrator comment was made. And it is that which we are working on, we want it to be the highest quality. And so although the interpretation of that letter has kind of gone in different directions, the intent of the letter was to say, we're only going to get working on this thing, bring people in to work on it. We don't want to waste your time. We respect your time. This is technology. It takes a lot of effort to get it right. But the big thing here is to not bring people in and have them work on a system that isn't ready. So the intent of that deferral, that delaying of the training, was to say, let us get it to the point where it really is where it needs to be. And I think that's a baked-in part. It's a core part of our development process, which is to make sure that the system works well so we don't have any surprises.
Well, thank you, Mr. Meekin, for that comment, and I appreciate it. My problem with the letter is not that you delayed training because you needed to delay training. My problem is that I didn't hear about it the day before. And
right.
The letter came out the next day, and I don't think that's appropriate.
Mr. Chair? Yeah.
Mr. Meekin or Ms. Olson?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you and I had talked about this at a meeting. I believe it was Wednesday. The decision was made Friday. I had no prior knowledge that they were running into defects. We make those decisions on Friday. We get status reports every Friday on how things are going. As we get closer to an implementation date, then things are brought up and we mitigate them at that time. At that Friday meeting, it was determined that in the training environment, where people would go to train, there was enough things that were not working. There were bugs, basically, that we said they need to be fixed. So it wasn't until Friday that when the email went out that I was made aware as well. I'm kept apprised, but generally I get my major update on Friday. So I apologize if you think that I withheld that information. I sincerely did not know this information on Wednesday. What I explained was our plan is to stand this up this spring. We have an adoption phase that's a critical part, and I think the deputy spoke to that. They need to understand how this is going to work for them. They need to test and try it out. We want this for them as much as we want it for our staff. We don't want them to be unprepared when customers start coming in and they have to start using the system. We haven't made any changes at this point. We haven't changed anything specifically except that we delayed until we could fix these defects, which is what we're doing right now. As Paul said, right now it's pretty much a day-to-day decision that we go through. We've all said we have one chance to make a first impression, and we knew that day that this was not going to leave a good impression. There were enough things in there that we said we need to make these tweaks to make sure that this is going to work for our business partners. So, I apologize, but I sincerely did not know that information the day we spoke.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Apology accepted. It was Friday the 13th, so blame it on that. Frank, did you have any follow-up questions?
I thought this was pretty thorough, but I'm sure that other members would probably fill in some blanks.
I'll go down my list then. Representative Howe is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I've got one question that's pertinent, and the other one's probably going to dredge up some old stuff that you're going to have to rehash, and I apologize for that. But I seen on the slide deck that you had an audit, and who does that audit? Is that internal audit? Is that an external audit? Is that the legislative auditor, state auditor? Who does that audit, if you could provide that for us?
Ms. Olson, or
Mr. Chair, member? We meet regularly with Commissioner Baden, Commissioner of Minute, to give updates. The technical team does. And back when we took this project over, he said, I think I would like you guys to do a best practice, which is to hire an outside, proven auditor. Our auditor is SES, that would come in and do an annual large audit and then quarterly updates on that. So we've had two annual audits now. I think they've been engaged for five quarterly periods. And they took a different approach with us, which is they don't just come in, they stay connected throughout it. They have full access to all of our meetings, all of our documentation, everything we're doing. For example, we had a meeting this morning and they called in. They're not technically right now in a writing and evaluating cycle, but they stay connected to the overall development effort and they come and go at any time. They generally do that over the phone, those types of things, and then they come in during their analysis period and writing period at the end of the quarter.
A follow-up person at home.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I'm going to kind of go backwards on you because I want to know, when was the decision made to build the system and not buy an off-the-shelf? And the reason I'm going to ask that question is that there's an outfit called Fast Enterprises who our Department of Revenue uses their Gentax software. They have an off-the-shelf fast DSVS software for driver services and vehicle services that our neighboring state, North Dakota, uses, who I hear about numerous times from our border cities, and 10 other states use it. And I believe over 20 states use their Gentax. So explain to me why we didn't go down that road of using an off-the-shelf that could be modified for our uses, and we've spent, it looks like, almost $100 million here to build our own system.
Mr. Macon.
Thank you, member. So we did. We went out for an RFP, and that is when we, spring of 12, so spring of 11, we went out with the RFP. There were two people that responded, 3M and HP. We went down the road to contract with 3M. That did not work out. We went down the road and signed a contract with HP, which was executed in the spring, April of 12. Mm-hmm. And then I think we talked about what happened with that. So we do know about that system you're talking about. It is a matter of timing. They did not respond to our RFP at the time that we did it. That would have been great if they would have done it and responded to that, but they did not.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question then lies in, was the proposal, the RFP that went out, was that to buy something off the shelf to modify, or was that to do this process that we're currently undertaking?
Mr. Meekin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, member. We explicitly went out and asked for a vendor who had not only had experience in the DMV space, but had production software in other states. And then we got those two respondents at that time.
Next, I have Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question goes to my ears perked up when I heard about the credentials for those larger deputy offices that have multiple locations and they have employees that would move around between the offices. Could you expand upon the testimony regarding potentially the same person having to have multiple credential sets per office?
Mr. Chair, thank you, member. Representative Lucero, I know you won't mind if we dive into this just a little bit, because I know you like this stuff. So we use the Oracle Identity Access Management platform on that. We did, with HP, we did design the Identity Access Management system so that one person could go to multiple locations. And then when they went to that location, it said, you're Paul Meekin at this deputy registrar, you are this role. And it went to another one and did that. It proved to be very complicated and very expensive to maintain based on the Oracle IAM platform, right? So just the technology that we had couldn't support it. We had many meetings on this. My apologies to everyone. I'm getting a little technical here. But what we ended up doing is coming up with a solution where we could link the records for reporting. Of course, the downside of that is that people have to remember two passwords. But from a system expense standpoint and maintenance, it proved to be much more effective and lower cost.
Follow-up, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, there definitely the answer will definitely go into the weeds. But I just want to draw to the attention, Mr. Chair, that can potentially be concerning. And the reason being is that this committee would recall the DVS illegal lookups that we've had, the incidents in the past by various state employees. In modern-day systems, they're implement single sign-on. So it's a single user having a single set of username, password, credentials that can be used no matter where they go. And the reason that's important is when it comes to proactively monitoring the activities of users and how they're accessing the data, who they're viewing, and the date, time stamps, et cetera, the objective is always to proactively detect anomalies and then take care of any inappropriate access or lookups. Unfortunately, under the old system, legacy system, that's not what happened. Right, the technology or the capabilities were not there to proactively detect anomalous activity in order to reprimand or stop that activity, but instead to discover it via another method and then have to retroactively go and perform lookups to see the audit trails to see the activity that may have occurred for a particular user and then take actions from there. So when I'm hearing that there are potentially one or more user accounts for an individual, and because it's the goal, at least as stated on slide, I think it's 18 here, improve user access security and data access auditing, there is an impact, Mr. Chair, to the potential proactive monitoring because you have an audit trail then, multiple audit trails because you have multiple accounts. And so I've just, again, drawing that to the attention because there is a concern there. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, may
thank you. Mr. Meek.
Just that we do link those in our reporting. We bring the two logs together, so we do can see all the activity for an individual.
I'd just like to remind everyone that I'm a farmer by trade and I hate weeds.
Okay.
So
we're done.
Just saying. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your sense of humor. So I did have a lot of questions, some of which were answered, and I will tell you a lot of my questions are sort of looking to the past in terms of what happened. And so I'm going to make some comments and then offer two questions if that's okay.
Very
good. So my colleague asked questions about the audit, and I looked at the date. It's August 27th through November 25th. And just hearing testimony today and looking at the criteria, cost, quality, schedule, scope, staffing, it sounds like we might have a different audit result other than green, 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 and yellow if that audit were completed today. So I'll leave it to you if you want to comment on what that audit might produce today if we were to audit. But my question really is, based on what people have asked today in terms of ability to accommodate some of these requests, what would be the timeline and what would be the cost in terms of making some of what needs to happen happen so that we can actually start to focus forward? So that would be my question, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members, I guess I'd like just a little bit more clarity on what kind of information you're looking for. As far as the services that we're offering and the timeline around that, the ones that we're not launching right away, is that correct? Or?
Correct.
Okay, Mr. Chair,
correct.
Great. Okay. Mr. Chair and members, for certainty, the electronic vehicle title registration is our top priority. That will start in development as soon as we launch the first phase of Midlars. We put the adoption phase together. So that will be coming up sometime in March. We have incorporated the cost of building that specific interface that we need to use for that vendor into our overall budget that you saw for Midlars. So that's just part of our development cost associated with that. The expedited services piece, I can't give you a definitive timeline right now. It will come, but our hope here is that with the assistance of the deputies and they're doing work on their end, the information comes up to us. We're scanning documents when they come in. We no longer have paper that moves around the office, that moves the process along much quicker, that we want to get our team focused on how does the new system work and how can we quickly turn these titles around and get ourselves out from the 90 or 50 days that we currently have. So we want to do an assessment on how the system is truly working before we look at building new functionality in the Midlars system. But like I said, we do have a process that we can work around it for now. It won't be part of Midlars, but it'll be something that we'll do in addition to building the Midlars system. So we will be able to accommodate those critical situations, those need to get titles quickly. If we find we're not able to accommodate that, if it's going to take more time or we need more time, then we certainly would adjust our priorities and we would make the move to get that implemented sooner than what we originally did. Our main goal here, though, is we know there's going to be a little bit of a dip in production from the deputy's perspective as well as ours because it's all new. People don't know and understand everything that they're going to need to do or how they do it. But as they become better in the system, as they become more familiar with it, as they start to understand the process, we expect to see those numbers start to turn. And turnaround time increases. And I think that's all of our goal here, is how do we get those titles turned around much quicker and we can appease the requests of our citizens.
So one follow-up question and perhaps someone else.
Representative Barr.
So we know already that there are delays to the capabilities of the system that you're rolling out, and I think others here have referenced Real ID is on the horizon. So if we've already got delays with these other critical system requirements that need to happen to serve constituents and citizens of our state, how do you then layer on or incorporate the needs for what we need to do for Real ID?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, first off, I want to clarify there are not delays. We had a delay in the implementation of training, but that has not done anything to our overall project plan at this point. We do plan, as we set up our schedule and our strategy, that we may have to build in some crunch time or some capacity if things don't go right.
We've got a little time in there built to be able to flex around that. We have certainly been very aware in all of our planning, starting last year, the potential that Real ID could be coming. We just didn't exactly know when it would be coming. So we have always been mindful of that and planning for it. We've had discussions with this committee about the implementation date. It's not just Minlar's, it's the card vendor as well that we need to get on board to be able to issue these cards. So we asked that we would have somewhat of a delay in actually implementing Real ID to able to accommodate the need for Minlar's to be able to be functional and the card vendor to be up and be able to produce those cards. So at this point, we don't see, depending on what this legislature comes up with, our estimation is that we will accommodate whatever that change might be.
Thank you. Members, I have a lot of members lined up with questions. We are down to 16 minutes of time. So make your questions brief, and if the testifiers would make their answers brief, we'll try and get through this. I really don't want to have to try and reschedule an extended hearing on this. So we're going to move ahead with Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Director Olson. And I realize that this is, I think, the fifth or sixth time I've heard Minlar's update in the course of my time here, and it's sometimes it's kind of the same dance, just different people as well. And you have to understand our need to be able to trust the information that you give us. And when I hear that you said something to our chair, within 48 hours you heard something different but didn't bother to let him know that, does kind of wonder, okay, what you're telling us today, Friday, are you going to be hearing something different? And so it kind of leads to the concern I have here. But I can remember back in Chair Hornstein's time when he was here, in which we were at 60-plus days in getting titles out, and there was a need for additional staff in order to bring that down. That money was appropriated. A year later, we were down to under a month. I don't believe that appropriation really has been pulled, so I think those dollars are still there. Now we're back up to over 60, and you said now it's down to 48 days, and you said, but that's okay because you can get a 21-day permit to put on your driver's license, which or get on your vehicle. But according to my math, and maybe it's simple math, but 21, even a second 21-day permit still isn't up to that 48 days. You're requiring people to pay for these permits way beyond what's there. And so I have real concern about how you actually are going to perform what you want. But my real question revolves around the timing of the entire process. Here in 2007, we were determined that we needed a new system. 2008 found the funding for that. It took 2 years just to identify the requirements for the new system, another 2 years to search for vendors, which apparently is just putting out requests for RFPs, in order for us to even start the process. And then April of 2012 to July of 2014, that's over 2 years, we allowed the manufacturer or the vendor at this point put together something that wasn't going to fit. It seems like there's a little bit of an issue of mismanagement and certainly a lack of urgency to get this done in a timely fashion. Now we're sitting with the extreme deadline of driver's license and Real ID getting it done within the next few years. And again, we're talking about, well, training is off, but we're still on track. But we've only got 2 years in order to get to that first deadline. We all have great concerns about that, and we're not developing the trust that we need to in confidence in what you're doing. And so if you could kind of help us out why it took so long to get us up and running and why it's going to be better now.
Ms. Olson or Mr. Meek.
Mr. Chair, a representative. I'll kind of take it in chunks. You talked about the 2 years to get the requirements, the 2 years to secure the vendor, and then the 2 years with the vendor. It was a very large procurement, as you know. And to do the procurement process within the law and in the manner and the procedures and the steps which the state has in place, and to work through that much content as far as what we wanted from it, it just it was a very arduous process whereby getting the requirements, writing an RFP that they could respond to, the vendor community. The actual contracting process took over a year. And then when we moved into working with the vendor, it is an example on that one where we have a schedule set forward, we're watching slippage, we're managing slippage with the project. We get to a certain point, we called them to task a number of times before we gave them the final ultimatum to get back on track or not, and just to do that in a fair manner with the vendor so that we could legitimately say that we had given that contract every possible option to succeed, and then unfortunately to have to turn and move away from that. All of those steps take a bunch of time clearly on that. So that's sort of the history on working through that process to get a dedicated vendor in.
Ms. Olson, did you have a comment?
Yes. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to go back to your opening comment about the 21-day permit and the backlog time frame, just for clarification. First off, there is no charge for the 21-day permit. It's simply a temporary registration that you put on your vehicle waiting for your plates and stickers to come. That's generally the scope of time that's needed. It's much shorter than that traditionally. The 60 days comes from when you actually receive your title, which is a different formatting. So there isn't necessarily a conflict with that. It's just a timing on when you need to get your plates so you can drive your vehicle legally on the road, and then as far as when you get your title. I think there is a lot of concern and urgency, and I recognize that maybe trust is not that prominent right now, because I agree. We've had several conversations here. What you have today is Paul and I had made this a commitment in 2014 that we would take this on. We took this on because it was the quickest way we could get this system stood up, and we knew that the options we had ahead of us were not viable. It would take too much time. Again, the procurement process would take too much time. So we took this very seriously, and we dove into this, and we were on task from day one. What you see here today is the efforts of the hard work that we put in. We had to hire staff. We didn't have staff to bring in to work a system like this. We have 60 people that we had to bring in. That's a procurement process as well. There's delays in trying to get things in motion, but we've done that. We've overcome that. We certainly would encourage you to come and see what's going on in our area so we can show you how this project is working, what it looks like, how it feels. I think you'd be amazed to see the number of people it takes to build a system like this and the timeline that we'd have. So we have made some dates available for a tour if you would like to come and see. And I think that would help explain a little bit more once you can visualize the work that we're doing and how we're doing it instead of just listening to our testimony. So I think we're taking a step in the right direction. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to this committee today, hopefully to clarify some of the concerns and the confusions. We're more than willing to come back if there's any further questions or things come up after this hearing to answer any questions. We want to be open and transparent. That is certainly our goal. And like I said earlier, I apologize for the miscommunication. Our take on the delay that we had to make on the 13th of January didn't rise to the level of dramatic concern. When we get to our rollout date, and if we can't make the actual rollout date, that's a date that will have more concern, but we are trying to mitigate that as much as possible to take care of the things that are happening along the way to make that as smooth as possible. So,
a follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'll just final comment. The people that I represent, when they see something that has taken 2, 4, 6, 7 years and then canceling it out and then saying, well, we need more people for procurement, they would all say it's just poor management. And I think that's there. So,
thank you, Representative. Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions, but they should both have short answers. I think Representative Petersburg is drawn out. I don't have a faith in the timeline at all. So who is the person? Where does the buck stop in the department on this project? Who is the person?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the Commissioner of Public Safety is responsible for this project.
Okay, and if
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we continue, after we're out of session and us vacationers leave and we go back into the department doing their work, these deadlines that you insist this time are going to work, and the system is going to work for those people. If it doesn't work, what are going to be the consequences? Because one of the challenges that we have is we kind of come in here, break you, feel bad for a day, and then when everything's all said and done, we still don't have the system. I think the frustration on this committee and people for the state of Minnesota is because we still don't have a system. And the only way you can get that, in the business world, there's consequences. It seems to people in Minnesota that there are never consequences for government. So what are the consequences if this doesn't work when we're being told that it's going to work? I'd like to know that. What are the consequences?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we have stood up part of this system when we stood it up in October. That part of the system is working. That's the foundation piece on the MIMARS project. So, to be honest with you, I don't think we have any option but to make this work. And if there are consequences, which I agree should be, I can't speak to what they are, except that what we have in place right now is working. What we're going to release to the deputies is more opportunity for them to get used to it. We'll continue to roll in that fashion. If there's a bug or something's not working, we get on it right away and fix it. But we don't have a turn-back option now. We have to keep going straight ahead.
Thank you.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for the depth of your answers. I mean, I think this is one of the best and most thorough presentation we've had on MIMARS, and I know it's been difficult for you people. But my question has to do with the online accessibility. Will all of the functions be accessible and available for online use? And if not, which ones will not be?
Ms. Olson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, are you talking about registering your motor vehicle, renewing your registration like you do today? Yes, that will be available online.
So, Mr. Chair, so even registering your vehicle, okay, well, that's, are there any functions that will not be available if the system, if an online system is available, and are you saying it will be available?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we have very few online systems that are available today. Our goal is to look at making more things available in the future. But we have very little functionality that exists today for customers to go online and do their business. The main one is online registration renewal.
Okay, well,
follow up, Representative Rumbeck.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Olson, I mean, I don't know what the utilization is, but I would imagine that customers are more and more interested in conducting this business online. And it would just be interesting to hear more about where you see that going, but apparently that's not where we're at today.
I'm going to move ahead. Representative Costa.
Thank you, and Director Olson, in your presentation you talked about the technology surcharge of $1 that has kind of gone away and came back and it's in the governor's budget again. But then also you kind of mentioned that you don't fully understand the operational cost. So how do you know that the $1 surcharge is going to be enough? And then in previous testimony, in previous years, you said that you didn't need the surcharge anymore. So we just want to know that the $1 is going to be enough and then how the operational surcharge is different from operational costs currently and going forward in the future. Why is there a difference?
Ms. Olson or
Mr. Chair?
Meekin.
Yeah, member? So the surcharge that sunsetted last year, that was the surcharge that put together the money for the development. We call those the build dollars, right? Now we're looking forward and saying, what will the cost to actually run the system? The operations cost or the run dollars to run the system? So there are two different buckets of money on that. We have been looking at the costs for hosting this in the data center, costs for the licensing of the software, and forecasting headcount to support the system, and that's where we came up with our forecast need for the operations budget.
Okay. A quick follow-up, Representative. There's no way that I'm going to get through all the questions that are on the list. We are going to bring you back. I'm not sure of the exact date. I do personally intend to come and visit your facility and see what's going on, and once we've established a date when I can come, I will make that available to other committee members. How many can we accommodate at one time?
Mr. Chair, I don't really feel there's a limit. We can break up the group in two if we need to. We'll just take whoever is interested in coming over, and we'll work around the number that we get.
All right. That's very generous of you, and I appreciate that. Members, I will find a time that works for me, and then I will let you know when that is, and if any of you want to come along, you're certainly welcome to come along. I'd like to do that before I bring you back to this committee.
Okay.
We have a we just started to touch on this issue of the $1 fee.
Uh-huh.
I personally am also very interested in your use of consultants,
uh-huh.
and I would like to understand better if there are folks that used to work at the department that are now consultants working for the department, just how that relationship works out, and it may not be the case with you, but it's a question I'm interested in. Members, I apologize for not being able to get through all your questions today, but I think we had an informative hearing. This is a very important issue for our committee, and I look forward to delving into it further in the future. This meeting is adjourned.